Welcome to Aldi's Mamia and Me podcast. I'm Jen Hogan, and today I'm joined by Louise Duffy for a very special episode live from Electric Picnic. You'll probably know Louise from her very popular RTÉ radio show, but also from her extensive TV work and podcasting. At home, she's mum to Elin and to Esme, mm-hmm. and her partner, Paul Galvin, your fellow fashion lover like himself.
Yes.
And you're going to chat to me today and fill me in all about parenting and talk about that. And you're also an ambassador as well, too, for Bernardo's. Yeah. And we'll chat a little bit about, more about them later on and the vital work that they do, especially as we come up to back to school for all the kids. So, Louise.
Jen.
You're here.
I'm so happy to be here.
And we're thrilled to have you.
And we had a lovely hour together already, so it was really nice. I mean, Electric Picnic is amazing.
Just the coolest place to be.
Yes. Anytime you want me to join you in Electric Picnic for a chat, I'll be there, okay?
But you're a veteran of Electric Picnic. It's only my second time.
Yeah. I used to come all the time. So I used to work with Today FM for years, and that was the greatest perk of the job because they have the sound garden. And when I started working there, when Today FM partnered with Electric Picnic, the sound garden was small. Now it is a huge venue. I'm so proud to see how big it is. And they have like a crazy lineup this year. We used to be there. And actually, it was so much fun there. I do remember coming to one festival in particular, one Electric Picnic, and not leaving. Not going to the main stage, not going anywhere else, and just staying there because it was great fun. Yeah, so I love Electric Picnic.
And is there anyone like that you've seen over the years that really stay with you? What was your favorite actor?
My first year at Electric Picnic was the year of Christy Moore and the XX. Like, you couldn't put the two of them side by side on any lineup, you know, so it was incredible. The diversity of the lineup was always so amazing. But that was an amazing year. I think it was maybe 2012, 2013. The XX, I just stood in heaven watching them, and Christy Moore as well. And then probably my favorite year was a couple of years later when Florence and the Machine were there. And I think Grace Jones was on the lineup then as well. And for some reason, I didn't go to Grace Jones, and everybody else did, and it was just the show of the year. She's insane. So it's always so much fun.
And do you and Paul, would you come down with Paul and usually, or would you?
Usually, pre-kids, and now we're like two kids getting out of school for the summer. We're so excited to be here for a couple of hours. But we kind of veered towards smaller festivals then since kids come along because it's a big job, yeah. But we used to annually love Electric Picnic when it was just the two of us.
Oh,
a lot of things have changed.
I think we have to divide everything into that different time, doesn't it? Pre-kids, after kids.
Absolutely.
that's how we should kind of limit or describe our dates nowadays,
exactly.
how it works. How did you meet Paul?
I met Paul, about 13 or 14 years ago. He happened to be in Castlebar doing some event, and my mom happened to want to go to it. So it was a very happy accident that we bumped into each other. So he was working in Castlebar and I had a few days of leave and I was at home and didn't expect to meet my husband at a random event in the Welcome In. That's where it was.
The Welcome In. We're all great love stories.
So that was maybe 13, 14 years ago. Yeah.
Oh, and were you together long before? So 13 or 14 years ago. Yeah. How old's your eldest now?
Six.
So you had a few years.
We had our time. Yeah.
We had
your fun. Yeah.
And now you're two kids. So you have six.
So six and three. So they both turned six and three this summer. Esme and Elin. And it's so much fun. I feel something clicked into place this summer because they're just manageable now, and you can throw them in the back of the car, and there's not a big palaver of packing. Well, there still is a bit, but it's just more manageable, and they're getting on good now. You know, there was maybe the first 2 years, I wasn't sure how it was going to work. Very different personalities, very different little women, but they're just, I see the friendship and the rapport coming, and it just feels more like a unit instead of two people trying to manage two other people. It's lovely. We've had a great summer with them.
That's always the thing that strikes me about my kids, like that, you know, the same ingredients and they are so different.
Yeah,
like,
it's
they're
wild.
So different.
You come as you are, I really think that.
Yeah.
And it's just our job then to, you know, bring out the best in them and help them manage the things that are tricky for them to manage. But it is wild. And it also helps me understand other people, you know, and we are just who we are and we're fully formed, you know, on arrival.
It's like that thing, isn't it? I remember reading before about how no child gets the same parent because the first time around, you're that. And I see it too, even the way I do things, like, you know, myself with my eldest versus the youngest. And you're probably, you know, so all those different things. You're learning to be a mother that first time, aren't you? You're going through it and you're learning all those different things. But you came from a house of predominantly boys, didn't you?
Yeah. Three boys, three brothers. Right. So I dreamed of sisters.
Okay.
Like, I have cousins who'll kill me because they're like, you know, we're pretty close. Yeah. But when you've grown up and three boys and there's so much he-man and male paraphernalia everywhere, I just dreamed of the femininity. And Paul will say to this day, you know, big days included, i.e., you know, marriage and giving birth to children, he never knew me to be as happy or excited than the day I found out we were having a second girl. Because I was like, we've got our little sisters now. Yeah. And it was just, also, I was deliriously happy to have two little girls, but also for him to be so fully outnumbered was very comical and delightful for me as well. I had already seen him at that point, you know, be bullied into getting his face painted or whatever by a two-year-old. So I thought, imagine there's two of them now. It's just glorious. So yeah.
Life as a parent of girls. I'm the exact opposite of you because I come from a house of all girls.
Yes.
And then I have one daughter and six sons. And so when you're talking He-Man, it is like, it is literally, well, Star Wars. Superheroes.
So what about her? Does she dream of the girliness?
No, that was the funny thing, because she's the eldest. And I remember thinking for a while, especially because I had sisters, I thought, okay, she doesn't have sisters. Obviously, you have no say, and thrilled with everybody, with my mix. But I remember I used to think that, but she is like, I see her with the lads and I see what she's like. And she has...
She's well able.
She is well able, absolutely well able. I see it as this strength building thing for her when she goes out in the world
leader,
later.
Yeah.
Whereas I went out going, oh my God. I went to all girls schools and then I lived in a house of all sisters. And who are these people? And,
I know.
But it is a totally different experience raising boys versus having sisters. So
100%. And we've never pushed them in any particular way. You know, they can pick what they want to wear and they can play what they want to play, but they're undeniably feminine. You know, they're very girly girls. You know, we played house for 2 hours yesterday and it was all babies and all that craziness. But yeah, so they just are, the femininity is there. Yeah.
Yeah, it just comes naturally. Yeah, it's the same as my own lads now. They're all so different to each other, even though they're obviously they're all boys, but they've such hugely different interests.
Yeah.
Again, I suppose it goes back to being their own individual person. But do you find in your house, as you outnumber your poor husband, how does it work with the parenting split? Is it even down the middle, or?
Yeah, I think we're pretty good. So I think, you know, in terms of like the day-to-day school drop-offs, bedtime, bath time, all that business, we're pretty nicely balanced on that front. However, you know, somebody spoke to me recently about the mental load, and I've been speaking to my husband nonstop about the mental load since. You know, he's never going to find himself worrying in the middle of the night now, and I wouldn't be worrying too much in the middle of the night about these things. But, you know, like, there's a constant to-do list in your head, I find, and that might be the way for everybody, but that's my thing, and I don't mind it, I enjoy it, but, you know, like school uniforms and, you know, worrying if they've got, you know, new sheets for their bed or like slides for their hair, whatever. In 100 years, it wouldn't cross his mind. And I'm okay with that, you know, but that's where I pick up the slack probably.
So the big question is the class WhatsApp group.
Well, oh my God, he's not on it.
This is where you're going
and
wrong.
I keep
you
threatening,
have to
I keep
that.
Saying, I'm going to tell the administrator to put you on. He's like, no. But like, Jesus, that's a lot of work, isn't it?
That's the biggest battle, getting the dads into the WhatsApp groups.
But hold on, but also the emails. I'm like, I'll have to give up my work just to manage the administration of a child in school now. It's non-stop. And then there's little break-off chats.
Uh-huh.
And every time someone sets them up, they're like, sorry for another WhatsApp group, but ballet. And you're like, oh, Lord, here we are. But it's great, but you need them.
There's WhatsApp groups about WhatsApp groups.
Yeah, but you need them, and it's great.
You really do. Yeah.
It's fun, yeah. But no, I need to get his number on a few of those lists.
Because the mental load, it is one of those things that we are still really taking on.
Yeah.
We haven't managed to shift that. Maybe it is just because we think differently. I don't know. It's hard to, you know. We often talk about when we hear people chatting about dads, and I'm conscious, like, dads are amazing and do incredible. Like, play obviously is equally incredibly important a role in their children's lives as mums do, but we do it differently.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's that thing of we're thinking about what needs to be done, And then perhaps dads are getting the credit sometimes.
Sometimes.
For doing it.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe that's where
But
it
you
goes.
Know what, it, what? How it balances out as well, sometimes I do see in our house. So if I'm worrying about those kind of things, Paul's more about the play, which is obviously, you know, the fun side of things. But he's brilliant at the play. I'm not great at the play. Like, I'm not great at the getting down on the floor and doing Barbies.
And doing the makeup.
And I thought I would be, but I'm, no, not, it's more like just getting them out and running them around. He'll do that in the evening, and that's great.
Actually, that's true in my house too, so Well, I'm giving out about the one having to be the person who thinks who's in all
he'll
the WhatsApp
group. Yeah.
He's the
he'll
one all running around with football and doing that side of things.
As so probably get, more balanced then than I
More balanced
admit,
than we give them credit for, definitely. Do you, are you, as school is coming up, are you organized?
Yeah, I did the uniform order the other day. Like, there's no school books, so we're in that scheme. I'm not sure of these schemes, but anyway, there's no school books
covered.
So it's just the little things now, you know, the little lunch boxes and stuff that she'll want to do herself anyway. So yeah, so got organized.
And how does she feel about coming back?
She loves it. I think summer is long for them, you know, and we've been really I think somebody said to me before, once you get into the school calendar, it just flies by. Maybe
it
you
does,
said that
it
to me,
really
Jen.
Does, yeah.
So it's like we were week by week, so I was like, okay, with that camp this week, we'll go to Mayo for a few weeks there, we'll go down to Kerry, we'll do this. So we've been very organized. A military operation for the summer. So I think I'm happy to get back into a more laid back routine of, we just get up on a Monday, we go to school, and it's not as I don't know, as orchestrated. It's just life then, you know. But summer has felt very regimented almost, because I have to keep them busy and, you know,
and trying to do
the, having
the
so juggle. Much fun.
It's all so much fun. But are you dreading the lunches and the homework and stuff? Are you the queen of
That's
Being
another
organized.
Thing. I'm not giving my husband credit. He does the homework too. I do the lunches. He does the homework. No, so I don't mind. I like that. And she's still at the, it's still a novelty to her. She loved last year. So she's only going into high infants now, senior infants. So she's happy to get back to it. And it's nice to see all her little pals. I mean, she saw them plenty, but like to get back into that swing of, you know, the little classes after school. And she'll be happy to get back there.
And is your youngest starting Montessori?
No, she's in the same place.
You still have that.
So I still fight with her every day, getting her in the door. So
still
some routine remains in our house.
And do you find, I suppose, like, I know, if I'm to think of my own situation, sometimes I find myself sounding like my mom, like all the things, you know, that you swore you weren't going to say, or you weren't going to do, because you were going to do it differently, because you knew better, and then you become a parent and you realize.
I hear her sometimes.
Yeah,
I said it to her the other day. You know, we used to laugh at my mom if we were out playing or whatever. She used to rap on the window with her rings to call us in, and I was at home in Mayo, and I felt, come in, and I was doing exactly the same thing, rattling on the window to roar at my children to come in. So full transformation into my mother has occurred.
It has happened.
And it's not a bad thing. It's okay.
Inevitable.
Yeah,
thing,
it is.
Isn't it?
And the greatest cliche is that you think you won't become a cliche, but you are a cliche. Like, there's no way around it.
We're walking cliches.
Yeah.
Well, we were chatting there before we came in, and we were talking about, I suppose, how different things are where we were growing up and even what our kids are kind of exposed to now. And would you find there's any similarities between your own childhood and the childhood your children are living at the moment?
I mean, just in terms of the values and how we want them to feel, you know, but in terms of their day-to-day is entirely different, you know. And in that, like, you know, I had to explain to Esme the other day, they were fighting over who got to watch what on Disney or Netflix or Prime or whatever, but they know where everything is, on what streaming platform it is. And I was like, do you know? And then this is, again, you sound like an owl one, but I was like, do you know, there was just like 3 hours of cartoons or less even when we came home, and we couldn't pick. We all had to watch the same thing. And, you know, so they have everything on tap. The choices is in, there's choice available in absolutely everything. So maybe that's the biggest difference. But in terms of, you know, how even our routines, how we spend time with them, that's all very similar to how I was reared as well.
I suppose, and I'm always slow, but I asked dads the exact same question, because it does have an impact on the career juggle, doesn't it? Like, how do you manage? Even does it drive you on? Do you find that your things have changed for you, that you've had to do a kind of a reshuffle and things? How do you manage the whole thing?
Impacted on my career? Like 100%, absolutely. Even in terms of, you know, when I had my child, going back from, so I was on evening radio at that time when I had Esme, and I went back a different person, and I was a different offering to them, and, you know, I didn't last very long in my job once I was a mother, because it was nighttime radio, if you had a child at home, and I mean, Paul was fine with her, but it was probably, I felt I was missing out on the harder part of her day, because, you know, the way kids are at evening, that witching hour is real. So, yeah, it impacted, and I didn't last very long in that job after I had Esme, like 3 months maybe before the writing was on the wall, you know. So it was a real thing. It did have a major impact. Yeah. But then I kind of freelanced for a while and juggled, and that was ferocious juggle of and a hustle of, you know, trying to find something that would suit our family. And it took maybe 3 years to find something that works for us. And now I have that kind of that balance. I'm loath to, you know, speak about it because it can change at any point, but you know, there is a balance in terms of I have a job now where I can either collect or drop them. We'll work that out.
And that's everything, isn't it? Oh my god, it makes such a difference. But was something else we were chatting that I was really interested in, and you were saying about like your relationship, because like when the kids come along, first of all it's you and him, and then it's sometimes you at him and him at you up in the rows. I mean, that everyone's tired, everyone's
you're just under pressure
of all the day, and you have different, totally different pressures, even if it is that juggle at work. But you've made, yourself and Paul have made this kind of conscious decision to prioritize your relationship. Will you tell me about that?
Well, and even like today, just to be together today is a lovely thing, you know, just to be, you know, a couple. No, Paul is really, you know, he's a lot more conscious of the need for that.
Yeah.
I'm kind of probably wrapped up in other things, but he's very insistent that we go for dinner once a week, just once a week, and it's just 2 hours or 3 hours, and that's kind of important.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the time you're flaked in the evening, you're wrecked, and you know, I find nighttime, bedtime now is kind of approaching 9 and 10 o'clock now in the summertime, yay summer. But yeah, so we do make that effort. You have to make that effort because you were here first.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it is trying to remember that you were a couple first. It's sometimes hard, isn't it?
Yeah,
like, 100%. Trying to find the time to actually do that. So it is great that you have managed to kind of pigeonhole.
Well, I wouldn't say we do it, like, you know, and even then sometimes you don't get to that every week, but if we don't we'll try and get out for breakfast on Sunday morning or something like that, just to kind of reset a little bit and talk, and that's nice.
And do you keep work now and family life separate?
Yeah, I guess so, yeah. Like, I go into work, I work in Radio 1, I go in there, and my job in there is entirely focused around music, so there's no place for my personal life or a conversation around that on air, and I'm so grateful for that, because previously I worked in commercial radio, and there was a kind of like a suggestion that you should always bring yourself into the role, you should always bring yourself into a link so that you become relatable to the audience, you know, so you kind of had to make every topic a little bit relatable to you, which is exhausting. It's really hard to do that. And now, because I guess it's a public service broadcast, it's a specialist show all about music. It doesn't matter what I've done, you know, in the hours before or after my show, this is entirely about music. So there is a pretty solid divide there, and that's a very healthy thing. Because then when, you know, I've spoken about finishing up on radio before, you're so married to it, and you're so, the lines are so blurred, who you are and who your home life and your work life is. When that ends, that's a very difficult thing to come to terms with as well. So it took a bit of, you had to kind of resettle yourself and figure out who you are off air. So that there's not the same, it's different now. I'm very much, you know, a broadcaster about a particular subject, and home is home.
So how would you build then, I suppose, your relationship with your listeners then, if you were trying to keep that distance there? Well, how do you do
because,
it?
Because it's funny, somebody had to look at my text the other day, and like, I work kind of solo in the daytime. Yeah. I go down to the studio and I'm there on my own, and I look through the text messages and the emails. But for one particular reason, one of my colleagues had to look through the text messages, and he said, Jesus, they're very invested in the music. They're a very erudite, astute listener that actually, you know, when they engage, it is about the music. Uh-huh. So that's an amazing thing. So we started off, I took over from Roland Collins, who had this huge legacy and this listenership that was very loyal to him. So I was very nervous about that because I didn't want to rattle the cage. I didn't want to lose anybody because that show was an important part of their day. So we just started very slow and it became a conversation as opposed to, I'm here to tell you what I think about music. I didn't want it to be like that. I learn as much about them, about music from them as they may learn from my show. And I'm loath to use the word learn either because it's a very relaxed, lighthearted conversation about music. But I take as much from them as they might take from the show. So, you know, and the beautiful thing about radio is that it can be immediate. So someone can text and say, did you know something happened on this day? And you can change the latter half of the show to suit that. So that's a lovely thing. So I would feel it is a conversation, it's a collaboration, and it's been beautiful, a beautiful relationship for the last 18 months. It's a very positive place for me and hopefully for them.
You sound really happy in doing this now.
I feel really lucky to do something that I enjoy and I feel passionate about, and that it's welcomed and it's growing slowly. It's just a gentle approach to what we want the show to be. So yeah, it's fabulous. I feel. I hope I'm not the only one.
You know your listeners love it too. But I'm going to test you now to see.
Oh God!
If you have made, I suppose, to see how easy a transition you made to parenthood with some of the quick fire questions.
Oh good! Hit
me. See if you made that transition as you did to your new radio show. And so I'll start with a nice easy one. Like, what's your biggest parenting fail?
Oh, just the parenting fails, Jen.
Just
thank
straight
you.
In there.
Oh, where do I start? Well, do you know, now this is terrible, but one of my daughters is sporting a fringe that she will definitely bring up to me in later years when she looks at the pictures of summer 2024. And I did it. I cut a fringe in her hair, and now people, when they see her, they're like, she did it herself, did she? And I'm like, okay, yeah. I don't know what I was thinking. I think I was going for a little Parisian short. It didn't work.
It didn't work.
Sorry, I won't even name the child. Sorry, I really messed up. And then other things, you know, like we have the teddy. One of the children has the teddy that is like the third child in our house. We left it after us in a hotel in Spain.
Oh.
And we were at the airport when we realized this. And I actually really did feel I had let her down so badly because it was like a little loss in her life. I felt she mourned the teddy. We had a spare at home, wasn't as battered, so it took a while to get him on board, but we left the teddy after us. That's a shocking thing to do.
Have you ever forgotten to collect one of your kids?
No, I haven't.
On more than one occasion?
No.
Have you ever got off on a family trip to be roaring at them in the back of the car going, why is he not answering me? Only to realize you're at your own home alone moment.
Well, I hate to tell you, Jen, my parents did that to me and I still cast it up to them. I'm like, remember that time you went on holidays and you left me in a filling station? So yeah, good luck.
Okay, so
you'll be hearing about that for a while.
When he's bringing it up years later, I just have to suck it up and get
off. You deserve that.
Get up with it. Can I ask you, what is your hidden talent?
Again, the word talent, I'm using that very undeservedly. But you know what? I turned 40. I'm about to get into position to show you. But I can play the cajon. You know those boxes you sit on and you've
built? Oh, yes.
That's about the scope of my musical talent, just something to hit.
Okay.
But I turned 40 recently and my dad got it for me. I love percussion. I wish I played the drums. This is the nearest I will ever get to playing the drums.
I'm only sorry we don't have one here
now. Well, listen, I could fashion one out of this lovely trunk, but I won't do that to anybody. Don't worry. Yeah. Yeah. But that's a talent. We use talent with inverted commas there on that one.
What's your favorite or most memorable Aldi Middle Aisle purchase?
Do you know what my friends and I were most excited about setting the clock to make sure we didn't miss it?
Go on.
The wooden toys. They're so good. Like, I'm such a dope. I have spent way too much money on those pretty toys that you think, oh, it's lovely. Like, you know, the Grimm's rainbows that are such a stupid price. I thought they'll have it forever. And they don't care. Yeah. And they're all equally battered after a couple of weeks with children. So I bought wooden toys, you know, for aesthetic purposes, hoping that our house won't be overrun with primary colored plastic, and spent too much on them, and then saw the ones in the middle aisle in Aldi, and honestly they were amazing. There was a little Noah's Ark and you could put the animals into the perfect shape. That was the best middle aisle purchase for me. We still have them and everyone got them.
I have a Noah and I'm thinking, oh, actually that sounds...
Oh, that would be nice.
Rather
than
the plastic battery.
Don't tell me you haven't embraced the Ark theme for
I
Noah.
I have totally embraced the Ark theme. I just don't have a wooden Ark.
That's like your daughter Chloe should be head to toe Chloe. You know, I mean, you have to get involved.
You just have to. Yeah, you do, you know. as well as being a parent and your job on radio, You're also the ambassador for Bernardo's.
Yes.
And can you tell me why you got involved with them?
Oh, I am so proud to be involved with Bernardo's, and I can tell you why, really. I started working with Bernardo's just at the start of this year, because
yeah.
like many people, was overwhelmed with what we were seeing happening mm-hmm. for children in the world. I think, you know, we've seen images we never in 100 years expected we would see before our
yeah.
eyes. So it was very difficult. So, you know, there's that sense of helplessness, like just a sense of devastation for the suffering of children, and you can't really do anything to help in the bigger scale. We kind of sadly know that, but I kind of had to think about things at Christmas and thought, well, if there's one thing I can do is help children at home in a very
yeah.
small way in terms of getting on board with a charity. So Bernardo's was the one for me. I think the work they do is incredible. I love their ethos is that childhood lasts forever, and it does, you know,
yeah.
like I'm still, you know, hitting my parents with a dig for leaving me behind at a filling station, you know.
Yeah,
you don't forget these things
too.
But you know, on a serious
yeah,
level
serious stuff.
Children experience very difficult things, and that's a charity that's on the ground working with children, working with families, and I think their work is invaluable. So I was really happy to get on board with them.
And I suppose we're probably seeing it. We're going to actually bring Deirdre Carroll.
Deirdre is here.
There you are, Deirdre. Will you come up? You might tell us a little bit more about what Bernardo's are doing, I suppose, at this time of year, especially as we get ready to go back to school. Welcome, Deirdre is project leader with Bernardo's.
Welcome to the couch.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.
Makers.
Really delighted to be here. And Louise, thanks for being our ambassador and chatting
so lucky.
So much.
And
nice
it's a big toddle as well. I did the big toddle because you have so many different initiatives.
We do.
And the big toddle was the one for me because it's the shortest walk
yeah.
you can do for a charity. Yeah, I'm up for that.
So there was that side of things. Deirdre, will you tell us a little bit? Louise has explained why she got involved as ambassador for Aldi's charity partner, Bernardo's. Why did you...
Absolutely, yeah. and thanks firstly for having us here today. We're delighted to be here, and thanks for promoting Bernardo's and the work that we do, and our link with Aldi. We're very grateful for that as well. So I'm a project leader with Bernardo's and,
yeah.
and have been for the last number of years. So my role is I support the services in Leash and Offaly.
Mm-hmm.
So we have family support services in Tullamore, Edenderry and Portlaoise. And I suppose the work that we do there is very vast, as you
yeah.
said a few minutes ago. So, you know, I suppose we're very privileged to work with families, and I suppose we work with them usually when a crisis happens or something, some bump in the road, as
yeah.
we've all felt. And sometimes people don't have the support that we might have,
yeah.
you know, in families. So we were called in to support them then. So that's kind of what we do.
And I suppose because of the nature of the work that you are doing and the crisis that lots of families are facing, could you tell us a little bit about some maybe the positive outcomes that
yeah.
have happened because of your
yeah.
involvement?
Absolutely. And I suppose the first thing to say is that, you know, every family hits crisis, every
yeah.
family hits, you know, we all need supports at different stages, and it's really important that we're able to access that. And I suppose we're in the utterly privileged position to be able to go in and support families. So Louise and I were chatting earlier on, you know, about, you know, if you think about your home or I think about my home, and if something happens and a stranger comes into that home,
yeah.
you know, we have to be so aware of the fact that these people are extremely vulnerable and we need to meet them where they're at
mm-hmm.
in a very non-judgmental way, and that's what we do. So I suppose we've been incredibly privileged, as I've said, to work with so many different families. You know, recently we worked with a family who were homeless. They had a very tragic situation happen and a parent had passed away. And I suppose we worked with the children, but we also worked with Dad, because Dad was really struggling with that, you know. And I suppose he gained to trust us and we gained trust with him. And I suppose the children then as well, we would have supported them individually and together as well. And then as a family unit, because sometimes when something happens, you know, things break away a little bit. So we had to build that up again. So I suppose that's one very small story that, you know, that has a big impact on families. But, you know, we've lots of those.
It's the side of thing, I suppose, people that don't think about the kind of the building up of the unit afterwards.
Yeah.
You're in a partnership with Aldi since 2020.
Yes.
And
absolutely.
You've raised nearly 2 million euro in that time.
In that time, yeah.
How has that partnership helped you?
It has been incredible. I suppose on an individual basis, it has helped us support families individually with vouchers.
Yeah.
But we've also kind of, we've been able to develop new projects and new services. One of the big ones would be wellbeing in schools. So we've developed a national service that goes out into schools and helps all children in relation to wellbeing. So breath work, body work, mind work. And to date, 24,000 children have been supported in that. So that's phenomenal. And that's due to our partnership with Aldi, they've allowed us to do that. So,
and I suppose we're up back to school time now again, and so again, families maybe feeling the pressure. What sort of things are you worried about for them, and how are you able to support families as they get ready to send children back?
It's a big thing at the moment, Jen. It's a conversation we're having in every home we're going into. You've had a conversation around it. And actually, Louise, you brought up about the school book scheme, you know, that you're really lucky to have that in your school. Some secondary schools don't have that, so we still have that, you know, issue and massive pressure on families. You know, we've had families over the summer who've had to reduce food for themselves so that they can put away money in order to support, you know, the back to school costs. So I think it's significant. You know, other things like uniforms. Some schools are really good and they give another option. Others aren't. They're quite regimented in what, you know, you need to. So it's the financial aspects of it, but the financial aspects then lead to mental health issues as well.
100%. And even just in terms of, you know, as we were talking about uniforms and things like that, mom guilt, like, you know, I can't stand the term, but like, the pressure of worrying about money, but then feeling like your kid might feel differently if they're in school and they don't have what other kids have.
Add into it.
I know it's only a secondary thing, but,
but it's
a very real thing.
It's a very real
thing. For
moms
and dads who are feeling that extra pressure, the pressure financially first, but the pressure of not doing what they want to do for their child.
Absolutely.
It's a very difficult thing.
No, it very much is. And I suppose, you know, hiding that from them as well. And, you know, and then, but you're not really hiding it, because I know you're both moms, I'm a mom. If you get overwhelmed, you know, all you hear is the noise in your head. So sometimes our role is to go in and support the moms and dads to quieten down that noise by, you know, giving different strategies to then look at what you know, what can we help with? What needs to happen first?
And it is all the extras, isn't it? Because the things we don't think about, you know, the even things like the extracurricular activities, we often don't talk about them in terms of back to school, but they're, again, as you pointed out there, Louise, they're the sort of things that kids are watching and seeing, and if their friends are involved in them, they would like to be part of it. And then that guilt that families must feel when they can't be part of that. And the books scheme obviously being very welcome, but there are other things that need to be done too, because we clearly haven't wiped out, particularly when your study came out and showed how much parents are struggling. There are other things we clearly need to do. What is it that you'd like to see the government do?
There's a couple of different things, and I suppose to get more details, I'd love for people to go onto bernardos.ie to really see the detail as well. Absolutely. That, you know, and even, you know, we spoke about the vastness of our services, that's all there. So I would advise people to go directly there. But in relation to government, I suppose things like we've just spoken about, the uniforms, you know, to give alternative options, you know, in relation to digital devices. You know, to, I suppose, support people in relation to looking at, can we support lower income families in relation to that? Because they're quite costly, as we know. And, you know, there's a couple of others there as well that, you know, we need to look into as well, and that they're quite doable and quite achievable.
They are. We just need to, I suppose, follow some of the guidelines that are even out there, and even some of their own recommendations.
Exactly.
Start trying to make things a little bit easier for families. I'm afraid we have run out of time, Louise and Deirdre, but thank you so much. It was an absolute pleasure to have you here. So thank you both.
Thanks.
Both for being here.
Thank you.
If you have enjoyed this episode, please do give us a share online or tell a friend, because we would love to continue to keep reaching new listeners. And we have a big back catalogue too, so there's lots of episodes that you can listen back to, including Tyke and Derry, Jennifer Zamparelli, Barry Keown, Louise Cooney, Keith Earls, and even Dustin the Turkey. There is something for everybody there, and we'd love to hear from you too. So if you want to get in touch with me, you can send me an email at mamiaandme@gmail.com. Thanks so much. Thank you.